podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to the Middlesex County Cricket League podcast. My name's Dan Hough from Twickenham. It's good to be back talking with you. The Knights have drawn well and truly in. It's dark by about half past four these days. The cricket season feels like it's a long time away, but of course there is cricket on. The Cricket World Cup is still on. It looks like it's been on for an awful long time, but that's still going. And we're also always keen to talk to people about their experiences in and around the world of cricket here in Middlesex. So today I'll be, as ever, with Sal Ali from North London. Sal, how are you?
Yeah, I'm good, Dan. Yeah, obviously it's that gloomy time of the year. Winter's it's raining all the time. It's dark, it's cold.
Feels like summer.
I hate these months. This is lighter though. You get a bit of sunshine occasionally.
Yeah, it's true. I also get colds at this time. You can probably hear I'm not 100% myself, so I'm sorry if I'm a bit groggy this evening. But yeah, I hear you. It's a funny old period of the autumn. Next year does feel like a long time away. No matter. We've got a guest on this evening, and it is, and this word gets used far too frequently, but a legend of the league, someone who a lot of our listeners will know personally, but will have come across on the field, and that's Jim Gattin. Jim, how are you?
Not too bad, thank you, Dan. Hey, Sal. Hope everyone's all well.
We're good. First question, actually, I should have flagged this right at the beginning. Football allegiances, Jim, do we have any, and do we need to know about them now?
I've been raised as a Spurs fan. I'll be honest, I'm not a avid soccer fan. I think it's, I just don't understand it. It's 22 millionaires chasing a pigskin. You chuck a set of shiny keys in the middle of the pitch and all of a sudden all chaos breaks loose. So, but no, if I do watch football, my wife's a Spurs fan, family's a Spurs fan. So, yeah, don't judge me.
It was all going so well, Jim. It was all going to say, because Sal is an Arsenal fan. So,
yeah.
Hey, get on well with my uncle then. That's fine. We're good. Yeah. We're good.
Cool. And Sal, Arsenal, you're sort of tootling along. Arteta's still moaning, isn't he?
That was bad last week. I'm not going to go into that too much. we're further than the table. Point off the top and sitting in a nice position there behind the top two. But yeah, I think it's the evening boys' season. So, injuries are sort of mounting up, which is a bit of a concern. But I'm sure we have a nice little break coming up for the boys and then back on again against actually Brentford after the winter of the international break. Yeah, so that'll be a tough one. Never easy going to Brentford.
Cool. All good. So much for football. Before we get to Middlesex, as I mentioned at the beginning, this Cricket World Cup thing, it does feel like it's been going for a long time. And you know why? Because it has been going for a long time. Have you been following, Jim? I guess you must have been, right? What do you make of it all?
I just don't think every time we have a World Cup, we have a different format. Mm-hmm. And I don't get it. We try and, obviously the whole point is to try and get the best four teams at the end, slugging it out, to see who the World Cup winner is. And I don't see why we can't just get a format, stick to a format and carry on. I just don't understand, because now you've got so many dead games of cricket. It's a waste of time. And I'm not saying it's bad for the game. I think it's good to have cricket on the TV, but it's also good to have meaningful cricket on the TV. So quality over quantity for me.
I hear you. What do you make of it, Sal? I'm just trying to think what the format was 4 years ago, because it definitely didn't feel as long and drawn out as it is now, but it was a long one then, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, it was in the UK, wasn't it, last time in England? So it must have been groups, I imagine, but as you mentioned last time, the last pod we recorded, the format is just conducive to, like, you know, going forever and ever. I know the cricket games are over, so we are now into the nitty-gritty semi-finals this week. But I think the format, my take is that India obviously have been a powerhouse so far, unbeatable. They get to the final, they lose in the last ball game, they've won every game beforehand, you could still be world champions. It just makes a bit of a, I don't know, for me, it doesn't sort of work for me that sort of way they've done things, really. I suppose that's how it is, though, really, isn't it? But, you know, that could easily happen, you know? Yeah, you've won every single game beforehand, and you do one game based, maybe it could be a bit of brilliance like Maxwell the other day, or condition might come into play, who knows, and that could define who's a world champion. For me, it doesn't at all work for me.
Yeah, I was thinking about that with the playoffs in American football, because of course you go through a long season, and this is a long tournament, and you get to the playoffs, and at least the results in the in the regular season mean something. They dictate who's at home. Now, of course, India's always going to be home in this tournament because they're hosting it. But you could quite plausibly have New Zealand, who are miles behind India, knock them out on a day because they won the toss. Win the toss back first, yep. It's seen as being a better thing to do. It's not a case, there you go, just put this out there, for saying that if you finish higher, then in the semi-finals, you win the toss. Or is this me being far too shout, radical for modern cricket?
No. I think that's a good shout.
Jim,
are you taking away the chance? Are you taking away that chance element, which is the whole point of the toss? I appreciate that you have earned your right to be in a spot. Then do you then say, okay, is there a choice of ground to be had? Is there another way of doing it? Another way of trying to give that slight advantage to the team that's won more? Or is it just a case of actually we've all played the same teams, so we've all had the same amount of cricket? So if you've got there by hook or by crook, you've got there. That's it. You know, whether you're over it by an inch or by a mile, should you change that element of chance purely because you've got 0.3 of a run faster than your opposition?
To be fair, I'm not sure. I'm advocating for this. It was just a thought that occurred to me that India is so far ahead, and yet it really is on that day. The semi-finals now, it's not like in the NFL at all, where they don't get any advantage for having battered everybody else on the way through. So was there anything you would change about the tournament? Would you advocate for going for two groups maybe? Or is that just too radical?
Yeah, I'm a fan of groups. I'm a fan of groups. Definitely that's the format that would appeal to me rather than this just long drawn out. I know there's a Champions Cup sort of qualification to play for as well. So seem to have been obviously fighting to the bitter end in certain games. But as you said, it's gone on too long. I'd rather go back to the old sort of system for me personally, anyway.
Well, that's another thing, the Champions League or Champions Trophy thing. I mean, maybe I'm just looking at this the wrong way, but if I were the West Indies, I'd be pretty unhappy with this because, sure, they didn't qualify for the World Cup and that was a big enough, disaster for them as it was. But they never even had the chance to qualify for the Champions Trophy. It just feels a bit harsh on them. One bad qualifying tournament and you're out of the two major tournaments that come in the next couple of years. Or is that, Jim, am I being a bit skew-whiff with that?
You've got to have competition. That's the whole point of professional sport. So if you're at the top level and you've had your chance to qualify for the World Cup, Champions Trophy, is that next year? The year after? Next year. So I guess from the ICC point of view is actually you've got to have a chance for everyone out there. And if that's your chance, then that's your chance. It's the same for every team. If you're in that qualifying spot, you've got Afghanistan and you've got the Netherlands and they've all fought hard for their places. Is it that harsh? Probably not, because West Indies will have known what they needed to do. I get your point in terms of they're two different tournaments. So should there be two different qualifyings? That's a question that, maybe should be put forward. But, if everyone knew what they had to do, I don't see, as long as the rules are the same for everyone, I can't see a problem with it.
Yeah, I get that. I just feel that if you're a big country that's struggling to get people to play cricket like the West Indies, you've been hit over the head twice here because you haven't qualified for one tournament. And if you don't qualify for the World Cup in football, then you start again with the European Championships, don't you? Again, I'm not 100% sure I'm advocating for it either. But it did occur to me when I realised what the Champions Trophy qualification was all about. But last question on the World Cup. Are we saying India's going to walk home in this, guys? Is that where it is, Sal? Is it India all the way, or can you see a surprise anywhere on there?
Well, I picked England, didn't I, originally? So that was my devil, didn't it? I think I was thinking about what makes a side so, what do you need to win this competition? And I think you need depth, and they have that. I mean, South Africa have been really impressed so far with their batting, especially the middle order, and what they've done really well is just kick on in their games. They've gone from, 7 over to like 10 over in the last 10 innings, or at least the last, not the last game, but previously beforehand. So they're definitely a strong side. Australia's got these individuals like Maxwell who can do what he did the other day, but it's India. I know people talk about teams peaking, but I don't buy that at all. No one said about Messi scored a hat-trick and in the quarterfinal, he's peaked now, he'll score again. These top cricketers and professionals in any sport, they've got the mindset to keep going and going. So I think India, as I said, bowling strong, batting strong. You know, the two guys got centuries today, but even Kohli's won them. So home advantage, I think we'll get
bowled now.
Any
Kohli, anyway,
no conditions.
He's getting people out then.
Yeah, took a week today. I saw it. Yeah, Colin Boyd, captain of his home ground. So that was quite nice of them. Yeah, they just seem strong. But, you know, it's one they forget. You mentioned beforehand, toss could dictate, individual brilliance could dictate, you know, who knows. So, but yeah, I'm going to go for India.
Yeah. Jimmy, are you going to surprise us all and say someone else is going to win it? I mean, any thoughts?
I think they've got to get through New Zealand first. New Zealand have been the, not so much the dark horse, but they've gone about their business real quietly. Nothing super spectacular. I think Ish Sodhi, he's played exceptionally well for someone who's quite new to the game and new to World Cup cricket. Something that I would have hoped that England did with Harry Brooks, really. It's just get him playing because he's going to be around for so many more years. Having some of the older guys who aren't going to make the next World Cup, it's not going to do England any good. It's not going to help them. You know, Ben Stokes has been taken along. He's sort of breaking case of emergency, that sort of case. What's the point? You're there to play cricket. Play cricket or not.
Yeah. I didn't really understand this thing with Ben Stokes where he had to stay on for the team. You're out at the World Cup. You're injured. The message to me there is you're saying that you know, if you go home in situations like that in the future, if anyone were to do it, then you're not committed enough. You're injured, man. Get yourself right. The tournament's gone. I don't know if I'm reading that wrong, but I just thought it was a bit of a strange call. You know, Stokes shouldn't have been there at the end. Even though he actually, of course, turned up and batted pretty well.
Yeah, I think it's his call, though. I think with this England team and what you hear about them saying and when you hear about things, you know, from Ben Stokes himself, if it feels that it's right for him to be there with the team and that's what he feels his job is, he wants to do that. He's not going to be told by anyone. Blimey, like any international sportsman I grew up with one, I can tell you now, if they've got something in their head, you ain't getting out. No chance.
I can
even
believe
now,
that.
Yeah, trying to change the old man's mind is not easy. So, and that's why they're international sportsmen. And all due respect to them, that is why they're international sportsmen. There's got to be a reason why they're at the top, and that mental strength and that once I've made a decision, I'm sticking with it. That's it.
I did wonder whether this one should have been taken out of his hands, but I mean, again, not a ditch that I'd die in. But it just struck me that it was a bit odd that he was persevering. But as you say, international sportsmen probably a different breed. Yeah. Let's get back to Middlesex, folks. We will obviously keep an eye on the World Cup over the next few days and weeks, see how that one goes. Jim, first question. Are you fit? Is the body
getting
working?
There. well,
I ask because I know you've had trouble with your knee, but yeah.
Oh, okay. I'll be honest, 25 years of abuse, playing decent level of cricket and hockey hasn't done it any favours. And I had that sort of most of the year off in 22. Probably shouldn't have played any cricket, but I played a couple of games for the Lord's Taverners because I love helping out that cause and for what they do. It's amazing. And even just turning up just to make sure they've got 11 guys there and to have a good day, it's brilliant, you know, just to be involved. And then Sasha sort of was like, oh, you know, do you fancy? All you have to do is stand at slip and bat. And I was just like, mate, you know, do what?
Captains are great at that.
I let him twist my arm.
Yeah.
And, so, you know, I've known Sash since, you know, we were sort of 10, 11 playing area cricket. And I don't want to let him down. I want to, you know, if he thought that I could do some good for the club, then I'll come and do some good for the club. You know, I thought have a couple of games in the twos, but no, straight into the ones. Duck, two, back for six balls against Enfield. And, you know, I was just kind of, what am I doing? I'm in absolute pain. You know, my first game was... I think it might have been Harris St Mary's, and we did 55 overs in the field as my first game back. It's not
nice.
What the knee wanted.
Yeah, nice.
Not what the knee wanted. And then get a three-ball duck. Well played. Thanks for coming. £12, please.
The brutality of cricket, eh?
That's why you love it. It's a very harsh mistress, but she rewards you when you put the work in.
Absolutely, And I mean, I had another slightly more serious question because, I mean, you know, as we get older, then injuries come to us all, goes without saying. But going back to the beginning, now, obviously, you're from a cricketing family. That's well known. But what was your introduction to the game? Where did you first start playing your junior cricket? How did senior cricket come to you?
So in terms of the cricket family, it actually came more to us from from mum's side. So a lot of people know that I started off at Enfield, and that was mum's family's club. Her dad, unfortunately, I never met mum's dad. He died when she was quite young. He was very heavily involved in Enfield. My mum's brother, he was a talented left-arm spinner, played for Enfield. And yeah, that's, my boundary. Well, our house was called Boundary Cottage because it was the boundary wall of Enfield Cricket Club. So it was a case of, right, I've had enough of you. Sling your rook over to the cricket club and go and play some sport. And a lot of people say, oh, you didn't really have much choice. I don't even remember making a choice. All I remember was enjoying playing cricket with my brother in the back garden. And when he was old enough, he went to play. And as soon as he went to play, that was it. I wanted to join him. I just trying to rush and get out there and play. And, a lot of my brother's friends, they were my friends and they're all older than me. And I just wanted to play. And that was it, really. And ended up playing for Enfield, for a number of years.
And so
So.
that would have been about the time that Enfield were winning the national, right? Was it that sort of era? I mean, it's a seriously good cricket team.
I'm not that old. They won the national in
Yeah, I'm not that old
86,
yet.
which was the year I was born.
Oh, I've blown it there, and I should have checked my years. Sorry, Jim. Lack
It's
of
fine. Someone
preparation
in
by
a
me.
lady, honestly, Dan, we had one day in the thermal pools in Italy. Next day, we went for a sightseeing tour. The lady thought I was under 18. I had to
Oof.
tell her that I was
What?
nearly 40. She was going to give me a discounted ticket. I probably should have shut up, really.
I'd have taken that. Oh, yeah. Being ID'd in a shop, that's a dream come true for me in this day and age.
She
Cool.
thought she was taking the
That's brilliant. So how long were you at Enfield then? How many years are we talking there?
So I guess I started my Colts career when I was 6 or 7, and then played at Enfield till I was 21. So I started playing senior cricket under the very watchful eye of Paul Nicholls when I was about 11 or 12, I think, in 13 cricket. Might have been a little bit older than that, but I was definitely playing Sunday friendlies around that time. And then, slowly made my way up the 11s. I think 2000, 2002, maybe I played my first team game. And then, yeah, just played through. Always wanted to play cricket to the best of my ability. So just. It was one of those things, really. I got to about 17, 18, and things didn't look like they were going to work for me at Middlesex. I got told I wasn't as good as my dad, so that's why I wasn't getting picked, which I found pretty tough to take because, if that was the same criteria everyone was being picked on, fair
Yeah,
play.
that's a fair
I don't
comment.
think it
Yeah.
was. So, sort of 16, 17 year old being told that, I was a little bit let, I felt a lot let down. Kind of went into a bit of a self-destruct mode and wasn't really sure what I wanted to do. I carried on playing cricket because it's something I always did. And then a pure chance encounter, a guy called Ed Howitt, who coached me when I was probably about 7 or 8 as an overseas player at Enfield. He was over for, I think he was over for Higgsy's wedding and he saw me playing a cup game. And basically, Tills had just run me out on 48, which was just one of those things. And as I came off, this. I couldn't remember him, and these guys just walking towards me. I've not even got into the clubhouse yet, and said, "You're coming to play cricket for me in Sydney." Okay, and
What,
like literally
today
after
or
I'd sort of
tomorrow?
30 seconds of that. Well,
Yeah.
no, it was literally if you can get yourself on a plane, you can play at Gordon, and then that was it. And I just sort of said, "Do you know what? I'd always wanted to go out and play in Sydney because Dad did it when he was a youngster. So I thought I'll go out there, have a crack. If I do well." Then why not? Just keep the dream alive. Just go and see how you get on. And then Neil Hurst got in touch with me over Facebook. Said, "Oh, if you fancy a Premier League club when you come back, Winchmore Hill doors are open." And then that was that.
And two great places to play cricket, I have to say. I mean, it's always a trek from Twickenham, but never a problem for me to go to Enfield or Winchmore Hill. I mean, the wickets, particularly Enfield, always felt it was a bit of a motorway to bat on, and it always has been, right?
Yeah, it's been real good wicket. One of their first class wickets, probably not as good as that.
Yeah.
So it was a good one to learn how to bat on, I tell you, especially, for the shorter pitch bowling because not many wickets in the league, sort of got up about above waist height. But as a youngster playing against some of the adults, they weren't shy of trying to hit me in the head. That's for sure. And that's how you learn. That's how I learned anyway. I'm not saying it's the right way or the wrong way. It's just the way I learned. But
well, you learned to hit it. It's coming out your head, don't you?
Play on, I think.
Yeah,
you see, hit it or wear it. I saw what happened to the old man when he wore it, and I didn't quite fancy that.
Fair comment. Sal, you wanted to come in there, right?
Yeah, I think you're right. We read out Jim's stats because he's the ultimate league legend in my eyes in terms of what he's done. Definitely with a bat at least. Leading run scoring the league since records were established, as you know, on the website by Paul Smith. Holds a record so far at 8,124 and counts, I imagine, still. Highest score, 159. 16 centuries, 39.50, averaging 33.01. I think it was 2. Also, handled the ball as well, though. Not just a batter, our Jim here. So, 263 wickets. And amazing figure of 9.43. Now, when I mentioned the name to you of Tom Spencer, Jim, when I say that, any memories of him?
Spencer dropped the catch.
And he took the 10 wickets as well, didn't he?
Oh dear, are you still on talking terms? And,
to be fair, Spence played 3, maybe 4 games for us. Very, very sadly, I think we were playing at North Mid, and he went down with heart palpitations, and we never heard or saw from him again. We knew he was okay. He was brought to us by Adam Howarth, I think, connection through Aldermore School. Unfortunately, you know, he's a lovely guy, talented cricketer. It's just sadly we never heard from him again. We did know that. Well, the last time we heard, he was in good nick. But to be fair, if an umpiring decision had gone our way, I took a catch at short leg off Dan Amity, which was pretty meaty, in our honest opinion. Hey, at that point, I think I'd got 8, so I was happy.
Impressive. And also win the league in 2012, with Richmond Hill Premier League winners. On that side, you had them in that era, 2012. I mean, that's some really illustrious names by Scott Newman, David Lane, Jamie Fort. I mean, what was your take on that side? What made you, you know, actually win the league, and what did you have about your side, like mentally, you know, off the pitch and on the pitch as well?
Well, we all got on pretty well, and I think to a man, we were all very competitive. There's never a case of, you know, I think Adams did a great job in trying to keep people calm and keep people sort of level rather than constantly having to bring people up a level. You had first class opening pair. You then had Luke Stoughton at 3. You know, the guy scored 4,000 Premier League runs. You know, again, he's played a lot of minor counties cricket. He's an exceptional bloke, an exceptional batter. And, you know, I burgled 4. You had a guy, Brendan McDonald at 5, who I played with at Gordon. He was a proper first grade cricketer at Gordon, who unfortunately had a pretty bad year with bat and ball. As a leg spinner, you need to bowl, but with our seam attack, it was very hard. You know, we had Tom Copelman come in partway through the year. And then you had people, you know, like Ollie Adamson in and out. You had Thorpey, you've got Toby Sharp, Josh Davey. You know, that's going to beat most minor county sides. You know, you got Sasha behind the sticks. If Gears wasn't keeping Dave Lane, it's just unreal. Adam Howarth had to bowl occasionally. But that year, from what I can remember, a lot of games finished at sort of 2-3 o'clock. And in previous years, it's always been who's got the best spinner, who's got the left arm spinner, who's going to win the league. And we did it with 4 seamers. You know, we had De La Rey as well, bless him, you know, come in and bowl the odd overs. Myself, occasionally needing to bowl, that's unheard of, really, to be fair. And that's just testament to the pressure, you know, Bones and Newman put on with the bat at the top. And then also when you've got people like Toby Sharp, Jamie Thorpe opening the bowling, you're not going to go too wrong. I think any team would sort of flip a coin and say, can I have that attack for one day?
And that squad was, I mean, I was thinking Adam Howarth got a bit of the Mike Brearley about him. Now, I don't think I ever played against Adam, actually. But from what I hear, as a captain, he was a really astute leader of men. And I was, how long did it take to get that team together? Was it a series of coincidences just brought you into the right place at the right time? Or was there a bit of Adam thinking this through thinking this will work, this might not work, we want this? Well, probably a bit of both, maybe.
Definitely a bit of both. When Adam took over in 2010, he sort of said to me, would you be my vice captain and what do you think? And the first thing for me is, was actually, we want a group of 15 guys who get on and want to play cricket and want the same thing. And that in any club or any team sport that I've played in, if you've got that amount of people wanting the same thing and happy to go about it in a similar way, then I think your team's going to be successful. If you've got certain people who want one thing from their cricket or their sport, a group wanting from another thing, you're always going to struggle. And Adam, you know, was lucky that, you know, in some respects, but in others, you know, his network with the MCC, you know, Hursty's network, Luke Stoughton, bringing those guys together was no accident. There were, work was done there, you know, speaking to these guys, going, you know, why don't you come and play for us? Why don't you come and play at one of the nicest grounds? You know, everyone knew each other. So it was really good. And I think Adam did really well in keeping a group of very big characters in line, to be perfectly honest.
I remember talking to Sasha about that, and he did say that you needed someone to do a bit of managing. But I'm sure that's no bad thing, right? Having larger-than-life folks around gives the whole thing a bit of dynamism.
No, if you look at any successful group, you want people, you know, anyone who thinks you're going to get 11 people in a room and agree on the same thing without any sort of issues or any sort of discussion, you know, I think they're a little bit arrogant to think that way. But any successful team, you're going to have people who are going to speak out, going to hold each other to account for their performances, who will hold themselves account for their performances. And, you know, looking at what you're trying to achieve, you know, and paying attention to the results and what you're doing, that is what was key, because everyone had that attitude. It wasn't something that Adam had to instill. I think, you know, everyone had that attitude, whether they were, you know, Morgs coming in for a game, Ollie coming in for a game, Hursty until his calf went, you know, Delaray when he came in, dropping in and out, Tom Copelman. There was never this one instance where we thought, this bloke's here for a ride, you know. Everyone wanted the same thing and they were willing to do whatever it took.
Yeah, and that sounds like a winning team. It sounds like you've got the mix, at least potentially, to do really well. Did the fact that you know, got a very famous relative who everybody who's listening to this podcast will know, does that make any difference when you've been playing the game? You mentioned about Middlesex. Sounds like it might have done there. But in terms of club cricket, did you ever feel that people knew you were because of, you know, because of the family links, or just not an issue really?
No, people very much thought they knew who I was because I walk the same or I may bat the same. Some people say I sound the same. You know, there are people who will say and act in a way which they probably wouldn't do to anyone else they didn't know. If it's certainly not in the case if you weren't on a cricket field where people actually behave in a certain way. And, you know, I'm a fiery character. Those who've played against me know I'm competitive. But I'd like to think I've never gone out...
Or umpired him.
Huh?
or umpired him.
Well, yeah. Absolutely. And to be honest with you, I know I'm not the easiest person to umpire, but that's because I'm competitive. But I'd like to say that I'm always polite. If I do have a question, I try and ask it politely. And all I ask for in return is the same respect. Or, you know, at least the same, you know, sort of courtesy, I guess. So, but yeah, you know, I've played against people, you know, especially when in my early years, he's Mike Gatting's son, and, you know, found things remarkably hilarious. But then when they find out I'm 12, all of a sudden the joke wasn't quite so funny. And, you know, I was lucky that when I was very young, I had someone like Paul Nicholls who did respect the game, kept me in line at times when I was young, you know, as any young kid will, who wants to push the boundaries and wants to compete. That is just the way of the force, for want of a better phrase. But at the same time, when the cookie bounced the other way, Paul was very much very keen to say to these people, hang on a minute, this kid is X, Y, and Z age. Is that really appropriate? Now, at times he didn't really need to because, you know, just one of those things. It's balance. Mm. You know, you've got a great upbringing that I've had from having, you know, my father and my mother and all those great opportunities. But you know, there is balance in life, and that is one of those balancing things.
Yeah. Before we keep going to with Winchell Hill, I know Sal's got a question he wanted to ask there. You just reminded me of another of my list of World Cup questions that I didn't ask, but I'm going to ask it now anyway to do with respecting the game. Was Angelo Matthews out?
Well, the way I look at it is there are rules. Yes, there is spirit of cricket, and that is down to anyone to follow. Now, you could argue that in the spirit of the game, Angelo Matthews has not respected it by taking so bloody long to get to the crease. Come on, man, you're a professional sportsman. What took you so long? It's not like you're playing on a Saturday, you've lost three wickets quickly, and you're waiting for the bloke to come in to switch your pads over. You know, you've got four sets of pads, 15 bats, enough people waiting on around you. Get to the crease, fella. Come on, you're a professional sportsman. Do I think it was the right thing to do? What's right and what's wrong? You know, if you're looking at it from the MCC spirit of the game, that, as I say, there's two sides to the story. There's a side of the story saying, you're both not going through. Does it really matter? So
I wouldn't buy that one. Yeah, I think you can't pick and choose based on the context of the game, can
correct.
You?
But then it's like when people say about man-cadding. Obviously, we've had Abbey, and he's not shy of a man-cad. But at the same time, it's in the rules. So, would you then say, for me as a batter, being stumped for a wide down leg side, well, that's nonsense. Surely, it's a wide. But no, it's in the rules. So, see you later. Thanks very much. If you don't want to be man-cadded, stay in your crease. It's the same way. If you don't want to be stumped, guess what? You stay in your crease. Simple.
I did like the way he had two in one innings. I don't know if too many people getting two man-cad in one innings. That is something else. Fair play.
On that game, do you know what was really funny? Was the second guy actually got a warning. A warning from the umpire, which was quite funny.
Doing?
He thought Abbey wasn't going to do it again. But Abbey sort of said to me after the first one, I mean, what are these guys doing? I said, don't know. If he does it again, if he takes the piss, do it. It's just in the rules.
I mean,
you wouldn't not stump him if he was run out, would you? You wouldn't not stump him if you're behind the sticks. So stump him. The guy's been, you know, the rules. Stay behind the line until the ball's out of his hand. Why is that so hard? You're not exactly.
I mean, to be honest with you, even people who don't like man cads would have to admit that in that second case, you've got to go. There's no way that you should have any sympathy for him if he's really trying to goad him into doing it. That's just ridiculous.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So anyway, that's one of those things. Everyone will see it differently. There's a reason why it was written into the laws, because actually, yes, it's kind of like stealing first base in baseball. You know, don't see them saying, oh, that's a man cad. You can't do that. Of course not. You're not in your crease. You're out. Laters. Yeah.
Although they have changed the terminology, Sal, haven't they? It's not man. We've been told about this. It's not man cad. It's just simply being run out, right?
It's just a run out. Yeah.
Yep. Cool. Should we get back to Winchell Hill, Sal?
Actually, talk about Winchell. So, I mean, you were at Enfield in the early years of your career in 2007, is that right, Jim? You moved to Winchell Hill?
Yep, so 2008 was my first season at Winchell.
It's what brought about the change? Local clubs near each other, almost like rivals, I suppose?
Yeah.
In a friendly way?
I mean, for me, I'd sat down when I was about 16 or 17. Middlesex were very clear that they wanted all their young players to be playing at Premier League clubs. And I sort of went, well, I'm born and bred at Enfield. I'm not playing a bad standard of cricket. You've picked me from this standard of cricket. And if I go to Winchmore Hill, the chances are, for the first season anyway, I'm going to be playing second level in cricket. You know, Bowen, Mohammed, Griffith, Varley, Morgan, Pryor, you've got Ollie, Adamson, yep, Hurst. Where is a 17-year-old Jim Gatting going to bat? He's going to bat at eight. You're not going to get better at cricket batting at eight, regardless of the standard, in my opinion. So I had a chat with Higgsy and just said, look, you know, can we try and do things a little bit differently, a little bit more professionally and try and, you know, try and actually do something? He said, yes, we'll try. Didn't quite end up that way. And obviously around that time, I got the news from Middlesex that they weren't going to pick me or give me an academy contract because it wasn't. The words were, I'm sorry, we don't think you're as good as your dad. So that's that. I don't know whether that was the coaches at the time trying to say, you know, trying to test out my mental strength and say, this is what you're going to be up against if you do be a pro. Can you handle it? And if they that was, that's fine. Well, I can honestly say deliver the message a lot better next time if you're dealing with someone like me, who is a son of someone who's played the sport to a professional level. And also, you've got to be picking everyone on the same criteria. And for someone like me who idolised his father, still do, for obvious reasons, I think most sons do, it was, well, if I'm not as good as him, and that's the level, that's it, job done. Get on the source, go and have a good time and see where life takes you, really. And that's kind of where I did. I kind of went into a bit of self-destructive mode, had a bit of a bad relationship with alcohol for a number of years towards the end of my career at Enfield. And then that one chance meeting where Ed Howitt sort of said to me, you need to come and play in Australia. I was like, okay. That night I spoke to a friend of mine, a friend of ours, Jess Gallion, who's Jason Gallion's sister. We're very close friends with the Gallions. And she said, get yourself on a plane, we'll find you a room and then go from there. And that was it. Went and played in Sydney, got some runs, really enjoyed the higher standard, the way they practice. Everything they did was, you know, very highly professional in comparison to what we do in England. So I, you know, when guys were surprised at what I could do and sort of said, you know, my first game, they went, we're going to pick you in second grade. I was like, crikey, that doesn't happen very often. Usually most guys like me, they start in the fourths and the fifths. And then that was it, really. Hursty sort of sent me that message. We had a chat and I was just like, yeah, this is what I want. I want to go and play decent club, higher standard, push myself, try and have a go. What's the point in saying, oh, I could have done it, but at least, you know, I can look myself in the mirror and go, yeah, I made the jump, went and did something and really enjoyed it.
And how many times have you been back to Australia since? Was it a regular thing?
Sadly, no, it was. Sadly, I should have gone back. And I was waiting around to hear about a contract extension because I was groundsman for Enfield when I came back. And then obviously they said, oh, we're thinking that, you know, they were saying, yeah, we want to keep you on. And for me, it was a case of, I don't think I'm going to make it as a professional cricketer, but I do need to make sure I've got a career. So that happened. And then that little thing called the recession, the banks crashed, very much affected that and found myself out of job. Couldn't go back because they'd filled the overseas slots and that was it, really. Just had to go and find another way.
Well, life does sometimes deal with these dicky hands, doesn't it? You got to deal with what's in front of it.
To be fair, Dan, I can't call any of my life a dicky hand. I've been very lucky with the family that I've been born into, very, very lucky with the support and the challenge that they've given me, especially from my older brother. But, you know, it's one of those things. At least I can look myself in the mirror and go, I never just lived off that in you know, in my eyes. I've definitely been about, I've tried, you know, I've just gone and try and find my way, just find something.
Well, the stats that Sal read out at the beginning would illustrate that, you know, in terms of Middlesex cricket, it's very much Jim Gattin that we're talking about here, not Mike Gattin's son. You know, the stats are just phenomenal. They're off the radar. We got one or two quickfire questions for you, Jim, just about your experiences in and around Middlesex. Yeah. First one, you've got one innings left to play, right? And it's a repeat of an innings that you've played in your life. Which one is it and why?
I think it's got to be my first 100 in the, or my only 100 in the Prem for me against Eastcote. And the reason why I say that, rather than the 80 odd that I got in 2012 against Teddington, is they're very similar in the fact that we lost some wickets. There was some very high quality bowling. And it was just a case of trying to work out, do I just survive and try and, you know, see where we get to, or do I go all out attack and try and get that way? And it was just that in it, one of those innings where you don't actually feel like you've had to think. You've just gone, right, okay, this part of the innings, this is what this needs. Next part of the innings, this is what that needs. And the funniest thing was, and I'm sure Vars won't mind me saying this, is I was due to bat at number 5. Unfortunately, Vars was feeling a touch poorly. Got caught short, and basically a wicket fell and Hursty came rushing out and went, Gat, are you ready? I was like, yeah, I can be. Why? I was like, coming, mate, you gotta go. And that was it.
Was,
yeah, absolutely. It was just one of those things. And I think they had Goodchild, Coleman, I think they still had Ravi bowling spin at that time. So, you know, my memory isn't that great. I'll be honest, a few times being hit in the head with hockey balls. But yeah, that's one of my more favourite ones, definitely, just because of the situation as well.
Makes a lot of sense. Makes a lot of sense. Sal, over to you.
So you've covered some, get some really top players in my junior time, Jim. You know, on your side and against you, which player would you say is the toughest you played against, and which player would you say is the most talented, or, you know, player you say is the most skilled player you've had on your side? Played alongside.
Yeah, I mean, it's quite hard. So I look at it in terms of two grades. You've got the guys who played first-class cricket, and then you've got the really talented club cricketers who didn't quite get there. So I think the toughest competitor I've ever played against is Weeksy. And obviously I knew him. He was one of my carers when I was a tot, when, you know, when Dad was at Middlesex. And I remember playing a cup game against Hampstead for Enfield when I was about 16. And we were just about to go out, and he took me to one side, and he stood one side of the boundary rope. He took one step over and he said, "Come over here." And he goes, "Now you're in my office. Anything that goes on that side doesn't matter. This is where I earn my money. This is where competition begins." And I never forgot that. And every time we played against each other, I knew I was in for a fight. And he never let up. If any, you know, I wouldn't say he tried harder for me, because Weeksy is probably one of the top professionals of first class cricket. And he was exceptional as a spinner, as a batter. He never gave anything away. Never. So in terms of a first-class player, Weeksy, definitely. I mean, Ace, on the rare occasion that we got to play against Ace, he was a different class. But Weeksy himself, just the grit, the determination, the lack of, you know, there was no air of arrogance about Weeksy. You were his opposition. That was it. Didn't matter how good he thought you were or how good he thought he was. It never came across. He was there to win, regardless. Now, you said in terms of talented players that I played with, I mean, again, first-class players, Josh Davey, Dave Alain, you know, Scott Newman, fantastic cricketers. But again, on the cusp, I was lucky enough to stand at short leg to Dan Amedy. And that guy, to stand at short leg, well, is fun. A lot of people don't like short leg. I always did. I did at Enfield, took a few decent catches, but being at short leg to Dan Am, what a privilege. The guy is an absolute legend as an off spinner, and as a right arm off spinner as well, was something. And then on the same level, you had Thorpey. You know, the guy used to swing it. He could do it both ways. I know towards the end of his career, I did a little bit of work with him because he struggled going from right to left-handers. And he probably won't mind me saying this. Steve Selwood used to take most people apart, but he particularly enjoyed ruining Thorpey's day. And I sort of saw something, and I was like, "Mate, have you ever thought of this?" And it was basically a case of just changing his run up to angle it at the batter's off stump. And he did it perfectly for right-handers, which is why bringing it back in, he was so deadly. And then he did it to Sellers, and he had Sellers in all sorts, both games. And it was brilliant, because I've never seen him enjoy so much, you know, playing against Sellers, because sometimes he used to get a little bit down. But in terms of, you know, seam bowlers, one of the best who didn't play first-class cricket. Same with Dan Am, one of the best who didn't play first-class.
But that often happens, doesn't it? I mean, sometimes the gap between the lower end of first-class cricket and the very best club cricketers, I would imagine, is probably not that big, right? Some club cricketers, for whatever reason, have chosen not to play first-class cricket, have not been in the right place at the right time to play, whereas some people who have made the jump, you know, that they've just been the lucky ones. I mean, is that a fair comment, or is it more complicated than that?
I think in some cases, yes. I think the as a general rule, like we spoke about mentality, that mentality between your general club cricketer to going to be a professional, that is a big jump. And a lot of people will say it's, you know, the 6 inches between the ears, not the 22 yards between the sticks that makes a cricketer. And I know, learning from his lordship, that is very much the case. You know, growing up with someone who's mentally tough as the old man wasn't necessarily easy. And I can tell you now, anyone who's got professional sportsmen in the family will know that the mental side of it is the difference. I think I will say with Dan and with Thorpe, I think they did suffer with some bad injuries. I know Thorpe especially suffered with his back, which definitely didn't, you know, at that age, I think when you're just supposed to be taking off, if, you know, you're held back by an injury, it definitely made a big difference. But obviously, you know, same with Dan. And I think Dan unfortunately came up against some cognitive misers and some discrimination there, which has been rife in our game. And I don't think he's right, because could you imagine someone like Dan Amedy bowling at the pavilion end at Lord's with a short leg, silly point, slip, and potentially a leg slip as well on a third day, fourth day wicket? It's bad enough on club cricket, let alone at somewhere like that. So again, you know, for me, those guys, big for me.
Now, I'll take the next one. We talked about grounds earlier, and I said, you know, I always enjoyed playing at Enfield and Winchmore Hill. Leave those two out of it. So the two-part question. Favourite ground in Middlesex to play on, other than those two, obviously. And favourite ground out of Middlesex, you know, whether it be in Australia, whether it be elsewhere, that you've always, you know, you've always either enjoyed playing on just because it's nice or because you've done particularly well, maybe.
I think I've been very lucky to play at Lord's. I've been very lucky to play at Wormsley. But I think Wormsley, for me, albeit the ground, the pitch can be a bit slow, in terms of the ground and the setting, such a lovely place. And, you know, if anyone ever gets a chance to play there, Wormsley, as a ground outside the Middlesex League, absolutely fantastic. I will say that Chatswood Oval, home of Gordon, is also a very, very nice place to play cricket. Now, Middlesex League, grounds-wise, it's a tough one, really, because I've been very lucky to play it to
exceptionally nice grounds.
But I think Teddington's, despite the drive, is a very nice place to play. I know they've got a nice new pavilion now, which I've not been lucky enough to set foot in yet. Hopefully that will change in the next couple of years when we get up in the Prem. But yeah, I think probably Tellington for me.
Seems a fair call. And they still have the deer all going all over the square. That's not changed. New pavilion or not. We went there this year and there must have been 40 deer who sort of invaded the ground as the light was going. So you could see the Tellington players like, get off.
I played a game for Enfield 2s years ago. I would have been 14 or 15. And I was sort of, there were a couple short of late dropouts. We're playing at Hampton Wick Royal away, and Dad brought it up for some unknown reason, and we had a stag invasion mid game. We had Dad at first slip trying to shoo this bloody stag off. It was absolutely hilarious because you've got two of the most stubborn animals in the world looking at each other. One going, you could make a pretty nice dinner. The other one going, I'm just going to hit you in my horns. And luckily, it never came down to it. Luckily, you know, a couple of claps, shoe off, off it went, and I was allowed to continue to bowl. But yeah, no, that's definitely up there. But getting into Teddington, you've got to watch out for the old deer. That's quite funny.
Yeah. Yeah, that's Bushy Park for you. And they do have that method with the clapping. It's, you know, that's the way they get them off. Enough of such things. Sal, over to you.
What do you prefer, Jim? Sky Sports or TMS, if you're listening to your test match?
I like the analysis on Sky. So I'll tell you what I do like doing, and it may seem a bit extreme. I will have the TV on mute and TMS on my phone. Especially when Nasser Hussain's on. If Nasser Hussain's on, I'm definitely not listening to Sky. Guy balls.
Oh, really? That is interesting.
He balls me to tease. And do you know what? You know, if anyone says, oh, you know, Jim Gatting's slagging you off, all the rest of it, I'm not slagging you off. All I'm saying is that you can be very, very two-faced, in my opinion, especially around the Ben Stokes issue. I think there are a lot of commentators around that, you know, sort of... All of a sudden, they're on Ben Stokes' backs for his behaviour in Bristol, whatever. And then all of a sudden, they're all lauding him and they all want to talk about him. And yet, when you go back and you hear some of the things that were said, I don't know about your walk of life. I know when I've heard these things, these are pretty concrete statements that people are making. They're not the sort of thing that you sort of make and then just go back on and expect everyone just to forget. And not in my opinion, anyway. They're quite strong statements. So, I just think at times he just needs to be a little bit more, let's have a look at what's going on here.
Interesting. I mean, I think one of the things we noticed with Sky is that the technical level of analysis has been developed by those guys over the last 25 years in a way that we could never have envisaged. But in the end, it is still people talking about the game, and sometimes you're going to warm to folks and sometimes you're not. Yeah.
Absolutely. I know some people used to hate Bob Willis. I used to love listening to Bob Willis, especially if I needed to sleep. Bless him. But do you know what I liked there? About it? I know there is a bit of a line there, but what I used to love, especially about Gower and all that, it's not because, you know, at times I've met them and it's dad's era, but you do tend to get, at times you just think, oh, come on, guys, just say what you're thinking. Please. We know what you're trying to say and there's nothing wrong with you saying it. Just say it. Please. That's just that, yeah. Maybe just the gangway. I don't know, but I just think at times, stop saying words for the sake of it, please.
Yeah. I tend to listen to different things depending on what I'm doing and where I am. Like if I'm in the office, it's a bit hard to have Sky Sports on the computer, but it's not hard at all to have TMS. You know, I can listen to that either. And no one cares.
I struggle. It's probably because of the ADHD. But I struggle. If I'm working, I have to work. I can't do both. Because I'm very, you know, for me, cricket was my first career. That's what I wanted. And I love it. It's been my life from before I could even remember. And I really do enjoy it. It's why I wanted to be a coach. And you know, for whatever reason, decided not to go that route. But I still love it, you know. When people want to talk cricket with Abbey, you know, he was brilliant because we used to do coaching, video analysis, all that stuff. I really enjoy it. That's why I love the Sky Sports stuff. But I can't split. I haven't got the capacity. I just struggle.
My employer would probably agree with you about me, actually. He spends far too much time there pretending to work, but he's actually not. He's listening to the cricket. Right, a question about the really important stuff now. We've beaten around the bush for far too long here. Tees. Right. Best tees on the circuit. Okay, again, let's exempt the two clubs that you play for just because it's easier. We don't want you to be like shot by anyone. So exempt the two clubs that you've played for. If you could eat one last cricket tee before you go, where would it be? And it doesn't even have to be in Middlesex, to be honest, or you perhaps have a Middlesex one and a non-Middlesex one.
Gore Court as a non-Middlesex one. It's like a three-course lunch. It was okay. That was fantastic, Gore Court. I think we played a cup game there. It was unreal.
Over in Kent, right?
Yeah, unreal.
Yeah, okay.
Absolutely unreal. But Middlesex League-wise, there's a few. You used to get a nice taste of curry at Osterley. I do like a curry.
Indian Gym? You got a curry there as well?
Mm-hmm. Yep. I think I've only played one game at Indian Gym, cricket-wise. But yeah, from memory, I think that was quite nice. The Highgate noodles, they're a special touch. I'm quite partial to a Chinese, definitely. So yeah, you know, no disrespect to any of the other clubs. I've never gone shy on food, as everyone will probably realise. I'm a tea lady's worst nightmare. But yeah.
Seems a fair call to me. Sal?
We can end this one, shoot. What would you say is your most memorable game ever? What comes to mind for you?
Oh, the 75 plays 72 on a wet one, Winchmore Hill versus Finchley.
Definitely. What's the context there then, Jim? Talk us through that. When was that? And which were you, 75 or 72?
Well, we were 75, luckily.
You were always going to say that, were you? Yeah.
Well, yeah. Why not? I think we lost the toss, batted first, and got skittled for 70 odd. And there was one part of the pitch which was dry and one part of the pitch which was wet. Dan Amity and Thorpey had to switch ends to make sure they got the right end. And it was just a brilliant game of cricket. Really hard fought, you know. No one gave anything away, really, and it was just exciting to the end. You know, it got to a start where we started to pick up with some runs and then we lost some wickets. Then, you know, Sellers came in. I think he started off 4-4-6. And then we got him out. And then it was just it was just one of those things. You'd have a steady flow of wickets. Some would come in, go quiet for a period, boundary go. And because it's such a short total, the guys lower down the order, I guess, are thinking, well, let's just, all you can do is keep going. All it takes is a couple of boundaries here, there, and everywhere. But hats off to Thorpe and Dan. They bowled exceptionally well that day.
It's often these low-scoring games, isn't it? You know, and it doesn't have to be like 75 or 72, but certainly when you're chasing 130 and you get it with two wickets left or you bowl the oppo out for 125, they're the ones you tend to remember rather than the shootouts where everyone's scoring, you know, with a 600 runs in a day.
Yeah. I mean, we in terms of one of those games against, who was it? Hornsey, I think 2021. I think we were playing at home. Les Bourne had got 140 odd, and they declared he was two runs short of his 150, and they declared with three or four overs short. And I think it was a limited overs game, and we knocked them off.
Decent effort. Last question from me. Cricket, brilliant game. Okay, there's so much I think that is wonderful about the game. But if you could change anything about cricket, one thing, what would you change? And it can be a law or it can be a piece of etiquette or whatever you damn well like. But what if you could change one thing, what would it be?
This whole stumping off a wide, that's got to be stopped. It's a wide.
Really?
It's a wide. It's an illegal delivery. Why should someone be allowed? You can't take a wicket off a no ball unless you run them out. So if it's a wide and you're being stumped, the stumping attributes a wicket to the bowler. It should be the same thing. You can't be stumped off a no ball, so why should you be stumped off a wide? In my opinion.
I like that. That's not one we've had before either as well. Is it, Sal? I don't think that's not.
No, it's the first time. But again, that's down to obviously playing for each other. So in one day cricket, a wide could be just narrowed down and excited compared to, you know, time game where it's not a wide, is it?
Well,
so I think there's that kind of balance.
The whole wide down leg side thing. Well, that's obviously, Sal, you've umpired me occasionally where I may have sort of chirped up going, hang a minute, if you're an off spinner, you're turning it and it's pitched on sort of middle and off and it's turned down leg side. Is that my fault? No, that's my skill. If the batter can't hit it, if it's short or if it started down there, fair enough, no issues with it. But if you've got, you know, especially with young spin bowlers, if you've got spin bowlers and you want them to spin the ball, again, you've got to ask the question, is that not the skill?
Yeah, no, I agree with that. That's always a tough one, isn't it?
Well, you've got an easy comeback there, though, Sal, haven't you? Yeah, you've just got to say, well, I don't make the laws of the game, which is what I would say all the time if I was an umpire, just to get myself out of jail.
And to be fair, I don't disagree. You know, I think the umpires are an impossible spot in that one.
That's an interesting one, that one.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just one of those things. It's just one of those things. There, I think, like anything, there is a degree of reason. I know I've seen it a few times in the blast and the one day competition in the UK game. I know that Ian Blackwell a couple of times has sort of said, hang on a minute, if the batter's moved, then the lines move with him. And also, at times, I know I've seen it with a couple of times with spinners where he's gone, well, it's not a wide. You've just missed a ball that's turned down leg side. You know, you can't constantly penalise the bowlers because the batter can't play a sweep shot or he can't use his feet or, you know, things like that. You know, as long as it's sensible, and this is where I don't envy umpires. I've done my level one during lockdown and I can appreciate that from a certain respect. But I don't think it's wrong for players to ask the question as long as it's done politely.
Absolutely. Is there anything you change, Sal? Just, I don't think I've ever asked you that. If there's one thing in the game that you think, like, I'm not sure we need to do that.
I'll ever think on it, you know, next podcast.
Fair enough.
So I'll be doing it.
One that occurred to me when I was asking it, and it's just, I never understood why this law was even brought in. I'd get rid of this, you know, you get fined penalty runs for simulation. Because I just think it's ridiculous. I just think, is that really an issue in the game? And it's only, what, 5-6 years old, isn't it, this simulation thing? But we had a guy, JP Cronier, you probably played against at some point at a gym, and he used to he'd always run behind a fielder and he'd dive as if he was picking up the ball, pretend to throw it in. Of course, he was 10 metres away from the ball. And of course, that would be 5 penalty runs now. And I just think, really? it's just JP Cronje being a bit of a clown. And I don't know. I just don't see the problem with it, really. I don't know if you see that one differently.
I've seen it done when I was playing sort of Middlesex cult stuff, sort of slash academy and twos and stuff. And I've seen guys do it in club cricket. First of all, why on earth you'd want to risk your knee or any part of your ankle or anything like that just to try and get a run out? And secondly, as I say, is it something that really takes away from the game as a batter? You know, I don't know. It's a tough one for me as a batter. I always like to make sure that it's in his hand anyway. I'm not that quick between the wickets to want to, you know, try and do something silly anyway. So it's a strange one. I can understand why they've done it, because it's just a clear thing to deceive. You're purely intending on deceiving the batter and trying to, you know, get an advantage by deception.
But isn't the googly exactly the same? The googly is exactly the same, isn't it? That's there to deceive. Of course it is. You're bowling a leg spinner, but no, it's not. It's a googly.
No,
it's more skill, isn't it?
I would say it's a skill. It's a skill.
But if I can trick you into going for an extra run, that's a skill. Maybe not.
Because you're, I would say I appreciate where you're going with it. Definitely.
Yeah.
But I guess one is you are still bowling a cricket ball.
Yeah.
The other is you're just sliding on the floor saying that I've got something when I haven't, which, again, you know, if you want to do that and ruin your body in the process, by all means.
I like the way you put that. It. Yeah.
Well, no, someone did it. I was playing in a game. Someone did it. I think I might have been playing for Enfield. I can't remember who it was. But they did it, wrecked their knee, and they fielded with 10.
Yeah.
Well done. You didn't run me out. You didn't stop the boundary. And
you're out for the season.
10 men.
Yeah.
Well done. Congratulations.
Yeah, I hear you. Yeah, I hear you. Again, not a ditch I'd die in, Jim, but just always one that occurred to me. I wouldn't have brought the role in, but I mean,
Absolutely. Yeah. I think it happened a couple of times in international games and people sort of went, don't like that. But hey, each to their own.
Absolutely. Sal, you got a question to round us off this evening, or are you done?
We can ask about next season's hope for Jim. Yeah. Obviously, relegation for Winchell Hill wasn't what they wanted. Winchell recuperating and getting ready for next season. Is that the plan?
Yeah. I think we were all very hopeful at the start of the season. We had a good, pretty decent bowling attack. We had the strongest batting lineup we've had since 2012, I think. And I think to a man, most of us will agree we've underperformed, myself included. I think it was one of those years. I mean, having 5 or 6 rain affected games wasn't great. And I think if you look at the timing of those games as well, you know, it's the same for everyone, I guess. But for us in particular, I think we had 2 games rained off or rain affected with Austerley and the lower side. We had North London. We had them on the ropes. Didn't play another ball. So again, should it have come down to that? Absolutely not. But in a highly competitive league, those margins do make a big difference. I mean, the interesting thing is the last season that I had this many rain affected games was in 2007, my last season at Enfield, and I think they got relegated as well. So for us, hold your hands up, move on. Let's get out of this league as quickly as possible. The last thing you want is to spend many seasons in the third division, especially if you've got aspirations of getting the Prem, which, you know, a lot of people do. So it's nothing against the league at all. I think it's actually a highly competitive league. People recognise it as one of the hardest to get out of because of, you know, the unique way that cricket is played. And I think every division has that as well, which is good, which is one of the beauties of Middlesex League cricket, I think.
And when will you start thinking about 2024 in terms of playing and nets and stuff in earnest? Are we talking sort of January time? Is that when you guys are, you know, begin to kick in?
Yeah, I think everyone tends to think that, you know, get Christmas out of the way. I know a lot of the guys play winter sports. Usually I'm playing hockey, but at the moment I'm putting myself in cotton wool to try and make sure I can actually play cricket rather than bat and hobble around at first slip, because that's really frustrating, especially when I think about, you know, used to bowl 17 overs, bat four, run around, be one of the better fielders in the team. Whereas now I feel like, you know, a weeble in the middle of a field that's allowed to go and swing a bat at some point. So so for me personally, after Christmas, definitely. And I think for the team as well, we're already looking at organising some training. But as I say, it's I know guys aren't professional. I would still like to prepare in a particular way, because that suits me and my style. So yeah, we'll see. We'll see where we can get to.
Well, Jim, very best of luck with that. We'll obviously follow your fortunes in 2024 and beyond in great detail. And you know, I think it, as you say, all of the divisions are competitive, and I totally get where you're coming from in saying you want to hit the ground running and make an instant impact there. Best of luck with that. Thanks for coming on and speaking to us this evening. You've been great value, loads and loads of stuff for us to get our teeth into, and hopefully we'll be able to reconvene again at some point in the future. Cool. Sal, we'll be probably back on in 3 or 4 weeks, won't we? We have a little bit of a less regular routine through the winter. But as ever, if anyone's got any feedback, comments, questions, rants, don't mind hearing a rant or two, that's all good, then do let us know. Sal?
Oh, yeah, I've got one thing to probably go. The League AGM takes place December the 4th.
It does.
Which is a Monday, 7:30 at Hendon Golf Club. So I imagine most club secretaries like yourself, Dan, will have received all the literature that needs to be looked at and voted upon when it comes to season being made. So, yeah, if you haven't had a look or had a chance to, definitely recommend doing that before the date itself. So it's going to be 4 Mondays' time.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. Yeah, if that information isn't epiphany to anybody, then get in touch with Nick and know that he'll send you the information over. And it's quite a long list of things to be discussed, right?
Yeah, there is quite a few items on the agenda, so we're interested. I'm sure you'll be there, Dan, to report back.
I will.
When it will take place.
I will. All good. Jim, thanks again for coming on board. Say winter
thanks
well.
Thanks for having me, guys.
And, yeah, cheers, Jim.
We'll speak soon.
Thanks, yeah.
Cheers, folks.
Bye.
Cheers.
Bye.
Podcast Network.